Launch vom neuen Auto. Sind alle ganz gespannt, euch das zu zeigen. Und ich bin ja heute Morgen schon gefahren, hat sich super angefühlt. Und dann heute Nachmittag fährt dann der Louis.
Yeah, what he said.
Love it.
Yes.
Love it to
Everywhere
pieces.
Everywhere that Lewis Hamilton goes, people are speaking German around him.
It's a whole new world.
There was a clip of him when he had his first day at Stuttgart. He went to visit the factory and he was stood on stage and a presenter was talking German and his face was like, oh my God, I've just realized I've joined a German team. It was like a sad realization. And then he goes to launch the car and Rosberg is talking German.
There were more car launches this week, including Mercedes. That means I must learn what Christine makes of the F1 car launches. Shall we start with Mercedes? Are we doing them in chronological order?
We are. It's
Where are we?
Launch-a-palooza this week.
It's what?
And we begin with Sauber, who launched on Saturday, the day after our last show. The launch was live. They had a live stream, although it was on YouTube, so that was good. It held up, except that it ended weirdly. They had the launch. They did it all. It was fine. The presenter said goodbye and then he ended it. And then it came back and they were talking to someone else. And then it died halfway through that and never came back. Mm. So it was like they did manage to have a whole launch. Then they tried to come back and it didn't work quite so well. So that was not so good.
Sauber, I think, were my favourite F1 team launch this season. I know we haven't seen Williams, but I don't think Williams are going to top this one. I thought they pitched the launch of the car perfectly in terms of it wasn't overly bombastic. It wasn't too reserved. They didn't restrict the fans and media from taking pictures of the car. It was open. It was streamed on YouTube for people who were interested. Also, it was at a weekend, so we could tune in. We didn't have to miss out because we were working. I genuinely think that if you had to pitch a Formula One launch, if I was organizing a Formula One launch, that's the kind of launch that I would put forward. Not too much razzmatazz, not too much ego. It was lacking in pomp. It was nice. It was straightforward. Here's the car. Here's the drivers. There was a technical bit that, you know, it had everything.
Well, the whole thing was just completely cute from start to finish. The presenter, he was like slightly older gentleman. And his accent meant that he was calling it the car unveiling all the time.
Fantastic.
Rather than unveiling.
How cute.
Which is lovely. And then there was Manisha, who we know is awesome. And the drivers, they make a little cute little pairing.
See, I was so worried last year we were going to lose Kamui and we were going to lose Sergio. And I laugh so much at those two. I love them so much.
Bless
they were
them.
My favourite driver pairing last year. And this year, actually, you know, I think there still might be some of that sticking around at Sauber. I liked Hülkenberg and Esteban. I liked the interviews. It was fun. It was lighthearted. There were some clips of them travelling around on Segways. And
yeah, they
small,
had some fun at the factory.
Little child cars. It was great. I really enjoyed it.
They seem to be getting on okay at the moment. And of course, the car itself, it has a bit of a new livery with some slate grey on it and they have new overalls. So yeah, all in all, I'd say it's a thumbs up.
What do you think of the car that they revealed? What do you make of the Sauber? Last year's was a monster. It was light on its tyres. It was fantastic. It came into its own towards the end of the race. Sauber have got a lot to live up to with this year's car. They've lost James Key. What do you make of what they presented?
Well, I'm no expert on that side of things. I know it looked nice colours.
Okay, I think that they've continued. Obviously, the rules and regulations haven't changed that much from year to year, and I think they may have they've pulled together another package which looks like it could be competitive. I like what I saw.
That is good. So I would rate that launch probably 9 out of 10.
Hmm. I can't disagree with that.
And then from one of the best launches, perhaps the best one, we went to a really bad one. We thought McLaren was going to be the worst, but I think Red Bull's launch on the Sunday rivals that McLaren one. At
really?
Least there was a launch from McLaren, however stilted and however embarrassing and awkward it was. Red Bull, the way they pitched it, it looked like it was going to be a rolling thing on their website. They weren't having a live stream, but they were going to have updates and quotes and pictures and things. I thought it was going to be like a fact box on their own site.
Okay,
throughout the afternoon,
saying,
I thought
yeah.
It was going to be brilliant. It was one video. The people that were present weren't allowed to take pictures. It was said that the Red Bull staff were aggressively stopping people
Security
taking pictures.
Was shipped into the factory. I think the people that the team had invited into the factory could not present or divulge any information about what they saw.
No,
which makes you wonder, why did they invite them into the factory?
It was like they didn't want to launch at all. They had Webber and Vettel there. They pulled the covers off the car. The only picture that came out of it that I saw was on the official Twitter feed, and that was blurry. So, well, it was completely completely pointless.
I did like the Red Bull. They had a pre-made video, which they were obviously they prepared for the launch. And unfortunately, the person who was in charge of making that available did so long before everybody who travelled to the factory saw the car. So sitting at home, we actually had more information than all the people who travelled to the launches.
They had to sit through 20 minutes of Martin Brundle talking while we had
the car. We've seen the pictures. We've seen it all, done it, moved on. Bored city. It was a dreadful
It wasn't launch. Really a launch. It was a video.
There's two ways of handling a car launch. And I think we saw both of these. If you look at the McLaren launch and you compare it to the Red Bull launch, either you present a car which isn't necessarily the car that's going to have to go into run at the first race and have all the bits and all the exciting new developments on it. And you announce essentially last year's car with some new sponsors on it, in which case it doesn't reveal too much information. That's one way of launching a car. The alternative is to launch the real car, something that actually has all of your innovations for this year on it. And I think that's probably what Red Bull did. But because of that, they weren't able. They kept it essentially undercover for the minimum amount of time. They kept prying eyes as far away from it as possible, and then they covered it up as soon as possible. So, do you want a Formula One car that bears no representation to what will race? It's just a market employ, which is presented there, which anyone can look around. They can poke their nose in, they can prod it, and they can sit up close to it and glean no information from it whatsoever. Or would you prefer to see the car, the innovative, the innovations, all of the new things for this year, but it's tucked away in the dark, in a corner, it's covered up, it's revealed briefly, and then it's hidden again. Which would you prefer to see?
Well, we want something in between where we can see a car and it has some bearing on what it's going to be like in Australia, and we're allowed to look at it. I don't think that's too much to ask of a launch.
It probably isn't. What Red Bull wanted to do was to launch their new livery, which was nice and purple. Surely you must love the new purple livery.
Well, purple is my favourite colour, and I do like the purple on it. But I just, you know, that can't make up for such a shockingly awful...
It's a tainted shade of purple.
Red Bull, exactly. Red Bull are supposed to be the party team. They always were. And this is just... It's not like them. Even when they get super uptight with all their championships and everything and their team orders and all that, they've not been this bad. It was just, it's embarrassing and I do not approve.
We had an invite to this Red Bull launch, which we declined to RSVP, mostly because we don't really want to be Formula One journalists.
We don't go outside.
We don't care about that kind of stuff. But actually, I am so glad that we didn't make the effort to travel all the way to Milton Keynes, only to sit in a dark room and see nothing and come home disappointed.
That would have been a waste of an afternoon.
I would have been so angry if I'd have gone to that. I feel very sorry for anybody who did, especially the journalists who were looking to find some kind of information out, you know, any kind of information. I know that Scarbs was there looking for any kind of tidbits of what the Adrian Newey had been up to over the winter. Poor guy couldn't see anything from where he was sitting. I think we saw more sitting at home, and that's just the way it is.
So the launch gets one. And that's just because, you know, there was a video.
Is that less than you gave McLaren?
I think I gave McLaren 2 because you gave them -2.
That is officially the worst Formula One launch of the season.
So far, we haven't covered the others, but it's fair to say it's the worst.
It's going to be hard to be worse than that. What a terrible, terrible idea.
With testing imminent, the launches moved on to Jerez, and Mercedes were up next. They launched their new car, and there was a lot of coverage, obviously, because this is Lewis Hamilton's new team, big story, etc., etc. But actually, I thought the biggest news on the day was that BlackBerry are sponsoring them, because I thought BlackBerry were going out of business.
Let's first, I need to roll this back. Just a step here, because let me take you back. You're talking Monday morning, the official launch of the Mercedes, but yep. Sunday evening there was a disaster of a Mercedes launch online.
It was a good idea.
It was a great idea.
They didn't do it at all right.
It was an unfortunate. The concept was the Mercedes PR team wanted to launch the livery via the medium of Twitter.
So the idea was, here is a hashtag. If you retweet this or get the hashtag out there, the more tweets we get, the more of the car with the new livery we will show off. And we have this website with a garage and the door will open up. So in our minds, we're thinking, this is amazing. They're going to have some kind of tally for every time this hashtag appears on Twitter. The door is going to creep up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to sit there watching it all afternoon, going up and up and up. And then we're going to see the car and it's going to be amazing.
That's how it should have gone. How did it actually go?
half the car appeared and then the website died for the rest of the day.
Yeah, initially from 4 p.m. the launch was about to begin and the website went down until I believe 9 p.m. that evening, totally flatlined. It couldn't handle a fraction of the traffic that it was getting because, well, I presume due to lack of planning or lack of understanding websites. I don't know what their issue was.
They should have done it on YouTube.
They should have done it like everybody else on YouTube. The threshold that opened the garage door, the number of tweets required to move the image on, just seemed to be far too great for the tweets they were getting, for the response that Mercedes were getting. They just weren't popular enough to reveal the car. And they just seemed to have missed a great opportunity. It was a brilliant concept. It was just flawed. And that meant that nobody really saw the car until it actually launched in Jerez the next day.
Well, I think some people had some blurry pictures and people were trying to extrapolate what they'd seen from half of a car in the garage. But by then it was just like, who cares? We'll just wait until Monday and we can see it in the flesh, so to speak.
Would you count this as you're evaluating the launches? Do you include this, or is this just something you're going to cast to one side and say, well, actually, it wasn't really the launch, let's forgive
them?
Well,
it's difficult. It does count as part of the launch package, but the thing is, it's a really good idea, so that gets extra points, but then it didn't work, so that is points off. So actually, it's sort of nothing in the end, but it is part of the launch.
It shows that Formula One teams can innovate in social media, but they're lacking a lot of experience when it comes to these kind of things. Yeah. Needs more years. That's what it needs. More launches.
Need more people.
Future seasons.
They need to nab some people from Google or something.
Let's talk BlackBerry then. What did so you thought BlackBerry were already out of business. This is news to you that they're still in existence?
Well, no. Technically, I know they're in existence because I have a BlackBerry forced upon me from my work.
Oh, you do? Oh, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, but I didn't think they would have the money to splash around some cash in Formula One. It was a surprise to me that they were becoming big sponsors. And it is quite big. It's big logo on the side.
Yeah, it's a major, major sponsorship. And the drivers and team personnel were all sporting BlackBerry devices.
Rosberg's been tweeting about his BlackBerry device all the time. And I think there was quite an amusing one where he said, I'm just going to take a video or something with my new BlackBerry sent from iPhone.
Yeah, there's a major disconnect. The team, I think, are looking forward to the new BlackBerry, which is going to launch soon. And they will all be looking to use that and make the most of what BlackBerry are bringing to the market. But at the moment, nobody's really interested in actually using the older devices, the thing that you're currently saddled with at work, because they're not very good. They are very old. And you're going to see drivers sneakily trying to use the devices they actually want to use, as opposed to the devices they've been given. I do have to say that Ross Brawn, shooting video with a mobile phone, I'm not buying that as a credible thing. I don't know whether he's not holding it right or he's just a very big guy with a very
natural
small phone. It's not a natural PR angle, and it just looks forced and awkward. Toto Wolff actually, I thought, carried it off much better. So maybe they should provide him with a BlackBerry. He looks like a guy who's a natural BlackBerry user.
A power user.
Yeah, definitely. Toto Wolff is the BlackBerry user in that team. The other three guys who were sporting them, they just didn't work at all.
So we think Ross Brawn's a bit more touchscreen.
I think Ross Brawn is more tablet than mobile phone.
Also a bit forced. I didn't like that they had the new car, the F1 W04, out on track. And I didn't like that they had randomly placed two actual Mercedes cars behind them with the gull wings up. Yeah, just don't do that.
You have this issue when you have car manufacturers in Formula One. There should be a rule, I think. I'll tell you what probably annoyed you more than anything. There should be a rule that applies to every car manufacturer in life, and that nobody should be allowed to make a car with gull wing doors unless it can also go back in time.
Well, yeah, there is that.
That should be a rule, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is probably what my problem with that is. Interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, I just thought that was a bit forced and a bit, PR, marketing, blah, blah, blah. But otherwise, it was, it was a nice sunny day and the launch seemed to go okay. So not too many complaints. I did think there was a news piece on their website. And as we were just saying, Lewis Hamilton has suddenly realised he's in a team that is quite German. And their news piece said, Lewis Hamilton will take the wheel of a Formula One Silver Arrow for the first time this afternoon, the first British works driver since Stirling Moss in 1955. Like, this is an amazing deal, except for the fact that they haven't been in it for 50 years.
They did bail.
And they've had the same driver lineup for the last three. So, of course, he's the first British driver. No one else has been in it.
Yeah, but if you're scrabbling for a decent headline, then I can see how somebody maybe thought that
Scrabbling is right.
Yeah, that is scraping the barrel slightly.
So that launch, I think I will give it 7 out of 10.
That's quite high, considering how bad that Sunday afternoon was, their initial launch. Yeah, that okay, fair enough. But it's good. The other thing, let's give them credit. They've brought a big, they've brought a major sponsor into Formula One. I can see other technology companies looking at that sponsorship and thinking, maybe we need to have some of that. We could see the likes of Samsung, HTC, other mobile manufacturers thinking, well, if it's good enough for BlackBerry, maybe it's good enough for us. This could be the start of something big.
Oh, so we did have a time when it was all Intel and IBM and all that.
Yeah,
Lenovo.
Prior to that, that was a period of Formula One sponsorship. Prior to that, there was the .com era when you had Yahoo and I think Alta Vista or whatever the search engine, the other big search engines at the time were.
I guess the last one was AT&T Williams.
Well, do we know Dell? Who's it sponsors Caterham? There's a big, it must be Dell. There's a big IT firm currently doing Caterham, but that's kind of back end business stuff. It's not consumer in your face, you know, mobile phones, camera phones, and that kind of thing. So that's something new that Formula One could maybe, you know, could make a bit of money out of.
The next launch, I think, was Toro Rosso, and I'll be honest, I don't know very much about this launch except it was bright red.
No live stream.
No live stream.
No decent coverage whatsoever. Toro Rosso's own homepage denied the existence of their new car for many hours after it had launched.
I think it was a step up from just rolling out the car ahead of a test. As we established last week, I'm not a big fan of that. And we'll discuss that a bit more in a minute. They did seem to have, you know, they had the boards up. They had a big red carpet. It seemed more of an event, even though it was at Jerez, obviously.
Okay, yes.
The red came from the sponsor Thepsa, however we're saying that. They put on the whole event, as they wanted to call it, and made everything blindingly red.
It was, yes. So what? There's an interesting problem here because you've got a purple a Red Bull and a red Toro Rosso, which seems to me slightly backwards. Wouldn't you want a red Red Bull and a purple?
Well, someone else said that, but if you have a red Red Bull, you can't have the Red Bull on it.
Yeah.
The bull is red, so it needs to have a different coloured background to be red.
Interesting. Okay, but yeah, so it worked for me because it was the right colour. If Thepsa were orange, that would have been a bigger issue. I agree, they did turn up the saturation maybe a little bit too much because there was red backgrounds, a red foreground, and the car was slightly lost. The drivers sort of blended in into the background. You had to squint to pick out the drivers amongst it. I also thought that the guy who was maybe the head of the company, head of the sponsor, I don't know who he was, but he looked incredibly awkward, hanging around at the back as if perhaps he shouldn't have been in shot.
It's like, hi.
Like, yeah, you don't look like a natural person to be at a Formula One
launch. It was the kind of thing you can imagine if Mr. Bean accidentally wandered onto the set
exactly
of something.
Exactly like Mr. Bean had just walked onto the set of a Formula One car launch.
Yeah, which actually was quite endearing in the end. So I didn't mind it that much. I don't think that I learned anything from it. But then again, they're Toro Rosso, and I'm not sure how much there is to learn anyway. So I reckon I would score that maybe 3 or 4.
Was that just for effort?
Just, yeah, it was, you know, more effort than I was expecting from them. The final two launches of our Launchapalooza, they took place ahead of the first day of testing. So they were just rollouts in the pit lane, that kind of thing.
Boring!
It was Marussia and Caterham, the two back marker teams. Marussia, what I found interesting was because they have to do it before the testing begins, they're so early in the morning, like the sun is rising and there's shadows everywhere. It's like, there are cars out here, I can't quite tell.
Not a great photo opportunity.
Still very dark, but on the Marussia, we could see that there are very few sponsors.
Less sponsors than last year. They've actually lost sponsors. Some teams found more. Marussia have managed to lose the ones they did have.
They did say they're going to be adding more and more as the season progresses, but they can say that all they want. We want to see the...
Name them.
Yeah. And they, of course, have their new driver in Luiz Razia, which means they have two rookie drivers for this year, which sounds a very risky prospect.
Yeah, I don't hold out much hope for this team at all. On the one hand, they do have Kurz, which is new, and that might help them. But it doesn't look like the prospects for 2013 are strong with that team.
No, it's going to be... I mean, the first year that all the teams ran Kurz, it never goes that smoothly anyway.
They've got a huge hill to climb, and you could see that from the moment they dropped Glock. The wheels began to fall off. And the only question is, how long until they completely drop?
Yeah, that's disappointing. The Caterham was a bit of a brighter launch. See what I did there, because it was green.
Lovely green.
Now,
Jaguar green, my favourite kind of Formula One green.
I disagree. It is not Jaguar green.
It is.
It is a certain level of green
What do you mean a certain level of green?
Brighter than last year. There's less yellow. Okay. There's no yellow down the nose. It's all green. There's just a bit of yellow at the back with the Renault logo on. At first I didn't like it. Now I don't really mind it. I can't say that I love it, but the car itself is just, it's the first car that I've seen this year. And obviously we all know the step noses are still really ugly. No one is saying that we've got over that, but it's the first car I've seen this year that I've physically recoiled from and thought, oh, that's not good.
It's
regardless of the color.
It is an unattractive chassis. No question about that. I like the front wing, the detailing around the front wing. Looks like a professional Formula One team designed it, as opposed to some kind of team that have just been thrown together in the back of a garage. It looked like they've put some effort into the styling and the shaping and to the importance of the front wing. That bodes well for this season. I think that's good. The nose, I agree, is a disaster of a look. Please, teams, can you not just cover up your noses for your launch at least? But I think the green is, I like the colour. I like the shade. I think it will stand out.
The colour is the most controversial thing we've had in the launch season so far.
In terms of disagreements?
This green, yeah.
The split. One thing that I will say is it may have been a last-minute decision to go with that colour, because if you look at the driver's overalls, they are still sporting last year's darker shade of green. If you look at the transporters in the paddock, they are all last year's shade of green and yellow. Nothing seems cohesive within the team. I don't know if that's a decision, but whether it's like a stylistic choice they've gone with, or whether they ran out of time to filter it down, or they didn't think repainting the trucks was important. But there is definitely two cage rooms in existence, the old yellow and green and the new shiny glossy reflective
green.
Bright green, yeah. And also they've added grey or like a matte black to the front of the nose, which appears nowhere else in any of the team's marketing materials or any of their paint schemes.
Maybe they were waiting to see what the reaction was and then they might decide which to go with. They had some nice behind the scenes videos though on the website and on YouTube. There's one where Charles Pick and Guido van der Garde, they are laughing. Well, actually, Pick isn't. He's very serious, but messing up the shot over and over again. It's nice. You know, behind the scenes stuff, seeing people with personalities. I mean, there's a few clips of Charles Pick, and that's more than I've seen of him the whole time he's been in F1.
When you say nice, what do you mean by nice?
What? They're just another cute team, all right?
How cute?
No, well, he is French, Pick. And now
you have that look in your eye that says, I really quite like Charles Pick.
No.
Not yet. We'll see. Keep an eye on that one, folks.
he still looks quite young. There also is a video that is over 2 minutes long, and it's just the car spinning around in a really slow circle.
Hypnotic car launch. This is the new thing in Formula One. Caterham are now putting Formula One fans into a trance in preparation for the new Formula One season.
I think it's probably good for people that like to see every angle of a car. I did almost fall asleep watching it. It was like a lullaby.
In fairness to Caterham, it's the first official rear end I've seen from a car this year. So that's good. The Lotus team launched with a CGI version of the back of their car. But this is the first time that we've actually seen the car in the detail. They're not hiding. Caterham have nothing to hide. They are the very opposite of Red Bull. They're putting it all out there. And that may be because they've got more to come, or maybe because they've just got nothing to hide.
So in Christine Rates the Launches news, Marussia and Caterham automatically lose points for just rolling it out ahead of the test. Marussia, probably 3. Caterham, 4, because the livery thing has caused a bit of controversy and I like that.
I think you'll sway over to my line of thinking before the end of the season. Give it some races to grow on you. I genuinely think it's the new Jaguar.
The launches ended just in time for testing to begin, and we won't go over the top covering everything that happened in testing because it is testing and you can't read too much into it. But what we can read into it is that Mercedes had a shocking start.
Terrible, terrible, terrible first 2 days.
Yeah, Rosberg was on the first day. He completed 11 laps before, I think, his car burst into flames or something. And then Hamilton was on the second day. More attention on him, as ever. He managed 15 laps before the brakes failed and he went off into the barriers.
I do believe he only managed 2 flying laps before that happened. He was just doing test runs until until then. So Mercedes accumulated precisely no data in their first 2 days of running, but they did make up for it in day three.
They went mental. Rosberg was back again. He did 148 laps, and Hamilton took the car. He did 145 laps. That is so many.
That is called making up for lost time.
It really is.
Good on them.
And a lot of people are comparing it to last year when Lotus had all kinds of issues and they still went on and did fine in the season. So it's hard to say whether it will affect them too much. Some of the other issues we've seen that aren't as serious. Marussia have had a suspension failure. McLaren had a fuel pump issue. Sauber ran out of fuel at one point. The Marussia, again, had an engine issue. Lotus had a clutch issue. Force India have had an exhaust issue. And Force India have also had a driver run into his own mechanic.
Ouch. Rookie mistake.
Now, we're not sure. Force India have run Paul de Resta and Jules Bianchi and James Rossiter this week. And they said that it wasn't a shootout. And James Rossiter hasn't really been in the frame for the seat, we don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But it sort of felt a bit like a shootout. And if it was, he's probably not going to get that job now.
If Force India are trying to pressure Ferrari into whatever they are trying to get from Ferrari in order to sign Jules Bianchi, putting Rossiter into the car and then having him run down one of the mechanics is not going to put the frighteners on Ferrari. That's not the way you want to go about it. So in that respect, their plan may have backfired. Luckily, we should say the mechanic in question was fine. He was bruised and a bit shaken.
Yeah, he went to the medical centre, but he turned out to be okay, which is good. And of course, Rossiter isn't the first person to hit a mechanic.
It won't be the last.
It does happen.
But it was it's terrible timing. Yeah. Very terrible timing, unfortunate. And when the pressure's on, things like that happen.
Jerez is a really good-looking place. We've seen quite a lot of nice pictures coming out of there. The sun's been shining.
It's been great weather.
Sunsets.
For testing and for photographing
testing. Sunrises. It's been lovely. Pirelli weren't so keen on the circuit because apparently the surface is quite abrasive, worse than last year, and they haven't been getting any useful information about it. And then today, there's been a massive hole in the track that stopped running. Delayed them.
Yes. Jerez doesn't feature on the Formula One calendar. And so to have, it's quite prestigious to have Formula One cars testing at their track, but they're clearly not able to keep up with the maintenance on the track in order to make sure that the cars keep running. They shouldn't be in a position where tyres are being destroyed in the way that they are. And it's definitely not, it's not going to help their cause if the track's falling to pieces and they have to delay testing by half an hour. That's not going to help them for next year. You might find that it's Barcelona and bust for 2014 because the circuit, what I don't understand it going to Jerez is terrible for analysing aerodynamics, which is obviously a very key thing to test. Barcelona is a much better place to run a Formula One car. And you may find that actually that's where everybody goes next year. That would make more sense to me. Because it's a better place. You'll get more information, you get more data, and obviously it's up to Formula One standards because they still have a Formula One race there.
I thought it was quite amusing because this hole in the track appeared around a corner and they tried to cover it up with
Did it sneak up on them?
They tried to cover it up with the curb. They just put it over the top as if like no one will notice. Like this is exactly where the drivers are going to run.
Is that what happened? I didn't realise that.
Which is why they had to take some extra time over lunch and things were delayed. So testing has not come to a happy end, really, in that sense. But the first 4 days are over and we get a bit of a break and then they'll be in Barcelona in a week and a bit, 2 weeks and a bit, however long it is.
Are you willing to draw any conclusions from what you've seen? Do you want to put your money on the table? Do you want to name somebody to watch? Who has been your highlight from testing? What have you taken away? Anything of note?
No. Not really.
Nothing.
Well, it's hard to say, isn't it? I thought it was interesting that Massa set the fastest time on the third day, but he was very keen to play it down and say, oh, it's nothing. Other people have set times faster and on different tyres and I wasn't doing anything. Like he perhaps wasn't supposed to set the fastest time. Maybe he was meant to be sandbagging or something. I don't know. I thought that was interesting. And Lotus look fast because Grosjean was fastest on one day and Kimi on the last day. So that's all I can tell you.
I thought the Red Bull looked, from what I've seen, the Red Bull looks like a decent car this year.
It looks better than they started with last year.
Mm-hmm. And Jenson Button's time on the first day was something to behold. So that's worth keeping an eye on. Maybe they showed more of a hand than perhaps they wanted to because that was quite a stunning time. But that's worth keeping in mind. He was obviously on
scared
the softer
Massa.
Tires. Yeah, it scared a lot of people, I think, looking at that car. I'm not sure anybody expected the McLaren to go quite so quickly. So keep an eye on those. They are definitely teams to watch. The cars at the back are still at the back.
It's just the same ones, isn't it? It's McLaren and it's Lotus and it's Red Bull and Ferrari.
That will happen when the regulations do not move on. When you've got consistency like we have from last year to this year, and you've got such a massive change coming up in 2014.
Everyone's just holding on to their hats and hoping.
You can't invest in too much for this year. I mean, Adrian Newey, he's going to go away with his pencil and, you know, you can come up with all sorts of innovations or whatever he's going to go on in his head, but you can't put thousands of pounds of resources into creating anything that's going to be thrown in the bin so quickly. And so when teams have got this established, when you've got this established pecking order throughout the field and no changes, and with such major changes around the corner, I think 2013 will be an almost identical season to last year.
Seven different winners coming up.
Not in that sense. I mean, in terms of the order and in the way that the season plays out. Red Bull aren't on the back foot, so expect them to kick off as they finished up last year, and the remainder of the teams to sort of slot in behind them.
It's really nice that F1 is back, and boy is it back. It's been a manic week because there hasn't been that much sporting action we could watch over the winter, has there?
There's been loads.
Oh, really?
And loads of sporting action. So podcast has been awash with crashed ice and sports cars and NFL and all sorts of stuff.
The NFL, I was so impressed with how dedicated everyone was to it. I didn't know it had that many fans on Side Podcast, obviously.
There is an amazing crossover between Formula One fans, who generally like motorsport and engines and noisy things, and NFL fans.
There's no wheels in football, is there?
There is. Well, no. I mean, we have had some quite awesome responses during the World Cup and during the Euro qualifiers in the past. But I think in the NFL season, we covered the NFL season just gone, as well as any F1 season, I think, that's our podcast. It's been an amazing amount of interest and response. And we had, I think, was it three guest posts just last week building up to the Super Bowl, which were incredible. All sorts of insight and opinions and fantastic coverage of that kind of thing. And what I must mention, something new that we introduced to our podcast almost subversively, mostly because it wasn't planned and it just sort of happened. But Kai wrote an NFL guest post earlier this week, which is sort of off topic. And it's gotten,
sort of.
So it's majorly off topic.
Where's the side pods in the NFL?
If you come to Side Podcast for your Formula One news, it's pretty much as far off topic as you could possibly get. But what was interesting is along with the NFL post, she's also submitted an F1 post. So it's something for everybody. A community aspect that we've always had and we'd like to continue, which is we're not only about F1, because there's more to life, amazingly, than F1.
There is.
But equally, if you come to Side Podcast for your Formula One news and for your Formula One information, there's still things for those fans to read. So nobody gets excluded. Nobody gets neglected. And it covers all of the bases.
The idea being, if you want to write an off-topic post on Side Podcast, we are perfectly willing to talk about that, you know, assuming it fits in with the whole ethos. But we'd also like to have F1 post alongside it as well. And it worked really well because Kai's post about F1 coverage in the US was brilliant.
I think it's fantastic. It's got a lot of comments. It's got a lot of insight. Because the thing is, what we've had in the past is, and it was pointed out to us recently, you have there's a fantastic community, obviously, surrounding Side Podcast, but it's a vocal community. And a lot of the time you'll get people who, you know, the people who shout the loudest get the most things. But there are thousands of people who come to Side Podcast who maybe don't take part in the community, don't have their say. They just turn up to read whatever we post. And often in the past have gotten confused by things that we, you know, were posting that are miles and miles off topic. But it's nice now we've started something, I think here, which I hope will continue.
It's F1 going hand in hand with other things.
So if you are thinking of off-topic subjects in the future, do pause for thought and also think, well, if I write this off-topic thing, if I go off on a tangent, that's cool, but what else can I bring to the Formula One fans who frequent Side Podcast too? And then maybe look to write more than one guest article.
There's one other thing that I need to bring up before we finish for the day, and that was a small piece of feedback I had from Philip, who said, two Feet Up Fridays, I thought. Or should that be Feet Up Friday twice, thought I. Absolutely inspired. A great surprise and a brilliant insight into the world of podcasting. Thank you. P.S. How long will it be before you're picked up by a major network? Well, quite a long time. I don't think that's ever going to happen. And actually, the two Feet Up Fridays in the feed thing was a mistake. That was not meant to happen. But what I think it has done is highlighted the fact that we do a live show and we do an edited show. And we should probably mention that in case anyone new is listening and didn't know.
So the show we did last week, unfortunately, the live show mistakenly got included in the main feed. This is the feed that most people subscribe to, as opposed to the customizable show selector feed where you can pick some live shows, some Aside with Joe's, that kind of thing. There's a mix and match thing. But the main feed that the majority of people subscribe to through iTunes and other podcast aggregation services, the live show, for the first time ever, I guess, because it was never intended to be on there.
It's not supposed to happen.
Sort of got just bundled in. So a lot of people listen to this ragtag, messed up, nonsensical load of waffle.
It's not that bad.
Well, it's by comparison to most of our shows, it's pretty bad. That sort of got spilled in, and then eventually we corrected it and solved it with the edit. So you're not planning to do that again?
No, but I just thought it was worth saying that there is a live show and it takes place on a Friday, and you can also listen to the live replay, which is there forever, if you feel like you want more of the insight of how the show comes together and what a messed up ragtag thing it is.
I'm just saying that we talk a lot of nonsense stuff in between. Yeah.
Or you can just stick to the lovely, polished, edited version, which will be in the feed all by itself.
That's what I'm saying. You're such a brilliant editor.
You see, now
that's what I'm saying.
It.
You do. You make such a fantastic. You produce such a fantastic show out of our ragtag collection of nonsense that people may not been expecting to hear what they heard. So apologies for doing that. In fairness, we are rough and ready and not really. We haven't quite got everything sussed, and we've forgotten how Side Podcast works over the off season.
Yeah, we're getting there though. We've done two shows in 2 weeks. That's pretty good. There are no more launches now until Williams on the 19th of February, which is, I think, when testing returns as well. So there may not be another show next week. Don't get used to this whole on a weekly basis thing. But I'm sure we'll be back again very soon, much sooner than we did last year.
How out of character and how out of sorts are Williams with this whole delayed launch? You can almost get the impression that the entire paddock have got their lives together, but Williams are still on holiday.
It's weird.
They forgot to unpack their bags.
Of all the teams that are lagging behind, your attention immediately goes to Force India because they're missing a driver. But actually, Williams are the ones that really are lagging, dragging their feet in the sand.
You see it on the calendar, but it's not until it's sort of, it's not until you've sort of seen it unfold that actually they feel like they're going to be a long way behind. I hope it works out for them. I hope they haven't made a mistake in doing things the way they're doing it. I hope they're still collecting data from this test. They're running the old car on a new set of tyres. It's not set up for what they're testing. They've got new parts, which hopefully they can gather some information from. But I'd love to see what they're going to launch.
I don't know, because if the tyres, as Pirelli have said, the tyres are useless and they're on last year's car, I can't imagine what they're getting out of this week. But it's some mileage, I suppose.
Bottas is getting more mileage, and that's probably the best you can hope for.
But next time we're here, we will find out, because they'll have launched and they'll have tested for a bit, and we'll be back to discuss it.
Okay, so you're saying there's going to be more Feet Up Fridays before the end of the off season. You are working as hard, Christine.
I am. It's how it's going to be.